Hello, Cancer, and welcome to your Vision Quest audio reading. My name is Eric Francis, working with you on, what day is it today? It is Monday, 1/11/16, starting at about 7:49 at night. I've been reading through charts associated with your sign and read through the written reading today. Started that thinking, what am I going to say in this discussion? And then looked at what I'd already written and looked at the charts, and suddenly there was like a whole list of notes in astrological shorthand. I'm not sure I'll even get to them all. I have cast your runes as well, which are going to be the focus of the second reading. But this rune spread is interesting in that it is evocative of protective powers. It's almost the theme of the whole spread, and how that keys back into your astrology. If you have read that, that your astrology is about how you are going to manage moving a lot of energy current through your life and through your body. And so on the one hand, there is this radical kind of transformative, subversive, revolutionary thing going on in your 10th place, 10th house up in Aries, the house and sign associated with your vocational calling. But since it's the sign Aries, there is an indication that finding yourself through your vocational calling is one of the keys to happiness and success as someone born under the sun sign Cancer or the rising sign Cancer. And the defensive and protective side of your astrology show up in the form of Saturn in the sixth house. So on the one hand, you've got this house of vocational calling and reputation and power, influence, fame, what you're known for, associated with Aries. And in that is a conjunction between Uranus and Eris. Has not happened since 1925. No one alive remembers it. We have to look back. We have to research to learn more about it. And the protective side of that radical revolutionary energy comes in the form of Saturn in the sixth house, the taskmaster planet in the house of work and service and well-being, the sixth. And in the Cancer charts, it's styled as Sagittarius, meaning your spiritual path is the service you provide in the work that you do every day. Your, what you might think of as your path of self-actualization, is being known in the world for what you do. So contrary to notions of the sign Cancer as being private, though it's not necessarily contradict, it is necessary to be well-known. I mean, in some ways I'm an example of that contradiction embodied, in that on one level I seem very public and I write about incredibly intimate things, and it seems like my thoughts all get published eventually. But also, I am a retreating person. I like to stay home. I don't like to go very far most of the time. And those are not contradictory. I think it's essential in the process of being known for what you do, being known for who you are, as is necessary in many vocational callings, that it's necessary to have a strong taproot and to have a place where you have some shelter and a sensation of home and a place where things are just so. We'll come to that in a bit when we get to the development of Jupiter going into your fourth house, Libra, later in the year. Okay, so let's look at some of these movements that that we have, and I was satisfied with the clarity of my ideas in the written piece. I don't think it requires too much re-explanation, but let me add one description, which is to say that, first of all, The crosses are very important in the way that I do astrology. And one of the ways I get these so-called general readings to work is I'm keenly aware of the crosses. And I learned a lot about the crosses from Alice Bailey, esoteric astrology, and why the crosses represent, you know, growth stages and how they all function as one energy system. And so in looking at the cross associated with the sign Cancer, that's cardinal cross. Yours is the first, water sign, cardinal sign. It's the second cardinal sign and the second sign I'm doing in this oral reading process. The other cardinal signs all work in an energy system with it. So you've got basically four signs that connect directly to and interplay with your sign. For instance, Aries as your 10th, and Capricorn as your opposite sign, your 7th, and vocation, 10th house. And that pretty much covers life. If you can do those four things, you cover the cardinal points, the things in between that'll fill themselves in. The cadent and succedent houses, as they are called. And here we're just working the angles. And when we work the angles, we find out that you have an astonishing amount of current going through cardinal cross, primarily in the form of Pluto, which has been around since God knows when, 2008, and is associated with a huge tide coming through the culture. There really was a change, a leaving behind the 2012 era, for example, as Pluto entered Capricorn in 08 and 09, phased in over a few months. And then, so that's right opposite your sign, opposite your sun, opposite any personal planets you have. Typically, when you have the sun in a sign, there's things stuck to it nearby, like maybe Venus or maybe Mercury. And then the 10th place, straight above, the symbolic midheaven, is Aries. And the 10th is one of the most important kind of prongs of reality, kind of a place that you grab onto for the purpose of understanding your existence and living out your dharma. And that's the 10th house. That's the house of the work you become known for, the reputation that you acquire over time, the interaction you have with the power structure, corporate and or government, your role in the corporate or government power structure. And this is all Aries in your chart. And in Aries, we have a couple of things. First of all, Eris has been there since you were born, long before you were born, activating that house on a basically permanent basis. And then Uranus, which arrived in 2011, phased in between late 10, mid 10, and early 11, March 10th, 2011, to be exact, is when it arrived. And that has put a lot of emphasis on your 10th house. And so you've got the relationship thing going at full strength with Pluto, kind of awakening, transforming, dismantling, completely rearranging your whole concept of relationship. If you go back to 2008, pick a day in 2008, open up your diary, pause, think. Who are you with? What were you doing? What were your expectations? What were your fears? What issues were you working through? Today, they are different. 15 degrees of Pluto later, whole new world. And Uranus, phasing in 10-11, going through your 10th, completely revolutionizing your vocational calling. It's another story than it was just 5 short years ago. And this has had a number of peaks of energy between early 12 and early 15, the Uranus-Pluto square. Those two houses were talking to each other, acting on one another, deepening each other's influence and effect, and getting your fucking attention. And now, the Uranus-Pluto square is separating. We're in the post-2012 era, is what I'm calling it for shorthand reference, which began, in my opinion, around mid-2015, and Uranus is back in the show. Uranus is conjunct Eris. For the first time, I'm flailing my arms around saying this, since 1925. That is rad. Uranus, Eris entered Aries, and the first thing that happened was it takes a conjunction from Uranus, commencing the Uranus in Aries era. Big times, big changes, 20s, a very high energy time, somewhat naive time, concordant with strong Aries astrology. One of the themes of Aries is not being so naive. And one of the things you've learned from the Aries angle of your chart is how to be more savvy, professionally savvy, how to move and shake Uranus, moving and shaking. Good keywords for Uranus. Now conjunct Eris, this is provoking the finding yourself. And what I said in the written reading is that if you don't have a vocation, if you're doing a career, not a vocation, where you strongly identify with what you're doing, where you really can say, yeah, I am a whatever, this is what I do, and the implication is you're badass, you're not going to be happy Cancerian. If you can identify with your calling and you follow the calling you identify with, that is one of the most important ingredients for making a happy camper Cancerian. And so these angular houses have been rocking. And the sign Cancer itself is always, you know, on the move. The moon is delivering two major events a month. I mean, the sun and the moon are not the star of the show for nothing. And by the way, it is good to know your moon sign. If you are born under the sign Cancer, write to us if you don't know it, or look it up on serenu.com, S-E-R-E-N-N-U. If your moon sign is, if your moon comes up especially early in the sign, like with the, in the first couple of degrees, or late, the last few degrees, 27, 28, 29, 30, you need your time. You need to know your time. So Cancerians, know your moon sign, because it is a direct extension of who you are, and it's the fastest moving variable among the orbiting objects. So that's an, a bit of an aside. But with this angular action in your charts, your life has been an exciting place, and you have made progress. And the beauty of Pluto and Uranus transits is that on one side of them, you can be looking at something that you are completely convinced is impossible, and you'll never do it, and you might think you may as well just crack your head against it. And then on the other side of the transit, somehow you did it. And now we're moving into a new phase where you're going to take everything you've learned and embody something really different. But the precaution, all these protective runes that came up, the precautionary piece of this is the grounding, the Saturnian grounding, so that your life doesn't become about how well you're known. Your life becomes about the work that you do every day, and being known for it is nice. You might need to sell some widgets, and therefore it's good to be known for making widgets, but really that's just sort of like, that's out there. The in there part, the spiritual path part, the devotion part, the actual Dharma piece is Saturn in Sagittarius. And Saturn in Sagittarius is making a square to Neptune in Pisces, and there is something here about the what you might think of as the true, authentic, utter, absolute embracing of spiritual path as daily dharma, what you do to hold the world together, what you do to make a little progress that day. That's how Saturn likes to be. At the end of the day, you say, well, I cleaned my desk, I wrote some memos, I solved that one problem, and I started this project. Not a big workload, but you can say, that's what I did. And at the end of every day, know what you did. Honor Saturn, both as the task that must be done and the task completed, no matter how modest it may be. And the theme of completion, I thought, was a great theme. I forgot I mentioned in this reading, which is that Cancerians can have a lot in common with Aries people because of the prominence of Aries. And one of the most important things we know about Aries is they need to be guided and counseled to complete what they begin, and that's a property of Cancer, particularly where one's work is concerned. And you have this awesome blessing of Saturn in your sixth saying, get up, do it, stay flexible, mutable sign, it's Saturn, be flexible, but come back to it every day. On the seventh day, God rested, so honor the Sabbath, and come back to it Monday, whatever day you your first day. And Saturn is squeezing the spiritual house in your chart, Pisces, the ninth house, an awesome ninth house, because instead of having a bunch of religious dogma for your ninth house, which you might have if it was like Capricorn on the ninth house, that you've got to deal with, you have the sign associated with what you might think of as, you know, pure mountain stream spirituality there, Pisces. The presence of many helpful influences, Neptune, Pisces, Borsisi, things that talk about belief, directly accessing resources, embracing the direct contact. We have something here that is very much akin to, you might think of it as the essence of direct spirituality, where you don't need a priest or the Pope in between you and the inner light. That's what's available with Pisces on the ninth house and planets there. And Saturn is saying, yes, this daily work in the style of both Sagittarius and Pisces is going to be your spiritual path. You might think, take an editing workshop? I could go to Omega Institute and take a class on, you know, the chakras. Well, I should pitch to Omega editing for people who write for spiritual publications, right? An editing class. Something that you... Saturn is pragmatic. This is the thing about Saturn. One of the ways to honor Saturn and have fun is to do what's practical. It's easy guidance, right? Sharpen all your pencils. You're going to need them. You know, clean out the silverware drawer. It's better than having it full of crumbs and little things that mice will thoroughly enjoy. Pragmatism. And this is the counterbalance to the possibility of, you know, becoming known and respected, and also, in the peaking fashion of Uranus, shaking up something. And the way that it is safe to be revolutionary and to shake things up is to come to work every day and show up on time and sharpen your pencils and do that thing for whatever it is, however many hours you do it for, till the job is done, and then you go home and you wake up and you do it again. Mars retrograde. Next topic on my little queue. Mars makes its retrograde beginning in Sagittarius, sixth house. This is, it starts in April. I don't have the dates handy. And the retrograde, so it starts Mars, very opinionated, in Sagittarius, focused on mission, right? Sixth house, the house of the military. It's Mars. So this is a lot of energy. This is a real kind of conquering spirit, highly focused. Remember, Saturn kind of containing Mars, Mars contained by Saturn. Keep that fighting spirit contained. Hold your energy. Don't let it get out into the world if you can avoid it. And then in service of that, Mars goes retrograde. And you might think of retrograde as doing a few things. One, it asks a question rather than makes a statement. So one way to translate a retrograde planet is turn it into a question. Another way to understand a retrograde planet is turn it within. And the third really great way to understand a retrograde planet is look back to the past. And last but not least, the story reverses, right, because the planet's moving through the zodiac allegedly backwards, so that you get two things happen. Going back into the previous house with the sign change, you're going from house 6, service, to house 5, fun, art, risk-taking, and sex. And I didn't say sex. I said sex. The reason I said it that way is it is Scorpio on this house for you. And anything involving sex and Scorpio is the deep, profound, changing, life-changing kind of contact. And it comes with a question, and it comes with a reference to the past, and it comes with a shift in emphasis on the concept of Mars from its Sagittarian expression, that which is right and true, into its Scorpionic expression, that which is felt and tasted and experienced hormonally. And so there is a kind of transition of what you might think of as kind of a spiritual devotion going into something more primal, much less abstract, much more personal and sensory. And sensory in the interior sense of sensory, that which you sense through your feelings. And this is part experienced with someone, and it is part experienced on your own. And the thing to remember is that it is, in a sense, the question that answers the statements of what we think of as spirituality and religion. Because underneath all of those assertions is a fundamental question of existence. And existence is sexual, and it is caused by sex in the physical sense. You can tell me about causal astral etheric and soul planes and all this, yes, and so forth. But the incarnating soul responds to fucking, to orgasm and pleasure and human surrendering, and enters through the experience of surrender. So before all of those increasingly built up house of cards like concepts is this sexual thing. And this is the path that Mars is treading from those spiritual concepts and ideas, even really basic ones like answering the calling and service, into answering feeling a more urgent and, as I said, hormonal, that's Scorpio, dimension of existence. And there you make discoveries. You retrieve something. It looks to me like this is very much a process of recovery, by which I mean go and get the thing, retrieve it. Part of what you're retrieving is an element of child self, an element of your primal sexuality. I will take a moment and say that by the time a lot of people are even in their 30s and older, they're convinced that sex has brought them nothing but pain, and then turn their derision or ignorance to sex, isolate it, turn it off, reduce its level of importance. And I'm saying that Mars retrograde in Scorpio is about finding it, and there is something fun, and it is indeed healing. The so-called separation of sexuality and spirituality is not a separation. It is an annihilation. All of the spiritual books begin with God created us. They don't begin with there were these people and they liked each other or were curious and they fucked and then you were born. Can you imagine like the book of Genesis beginning, hello, mom and dad had sex and you showed up. And that sex itself is something that is, I hate to say it, but typically considered disgusting by most people. Can't think about it. And I'm proposing maybe think about it a little bit. Think about it to the point where the human act that engendered your creation is at least beautiful, a turn on. And let it go. But make contact with the beauty of the fact that you were brought, invited, manifested, responded to the vibration of this earth through your parents getting it on. Much more to discover in that transit into the fifth house. And the keynote of the fifth, the way you know you're in the fifth is, feels a little daring. And so that would apply to what you retrieve from the past. That feels a little bit daring. It would apply to what you do when you search inwardly. That would be a little bit daring. The fun would be a little bit daring. It would be the kind of sex where you say, when you've finished doing it, does that make me a pervert? And then you burst out laughing because you realize, no, it just means that you had some fun. Flipping along, Venus, in Cancer, on the solstice. It's all about love. And it is time for you to trust that as you love, people will be drawn to you. I suggest you solve the mystery of this and just try it out and see what happens. Furthermore, Venus, the attractive force, is near Juno, actually Hera, Karma, Hera and Karma, asteroids. Jealousy is, to borrow a well-trodden phrase, bad karma. It doesn't build anything constructive. It is adharmic. It is acting as if to rip the world apart. Compersion, embracing with empathy the eroticism of everyone and everything, including your parents and your kids and yourself and your partner in all of its forms, is dharmic. It holds the community together, holds the world together. And to do that, it's essential to bridge something inside yourself. You have to straddle a kind of a contradiction, to use the words of Rilke, and heal that chasm in the human race that experiences love competitively. There will be great blessings upon you if you experience love as a form of allowing, embracing, and generosity. Jupiter in Virgo now, then as of September in Libra. Let's see how that looks in the very scribble-on chart that I have. You know, one of the cool things about sign Cancer and Cancer rising is that we tend to think of Aries as being the quote-unquote natural chart. Aries, first house, Taurus, second house, Gemini, third house. Actually, the whole thing works a lot better if you follow the schema of the Thema Mundi. That's on the resources page, article about the Thema Mundi. And in that schema, it puts Virgo on the third house of your chart. And here's another one of those beautifully practical placements. Virgo on the third is about being able to focus your thoughts. Cancer is not the deluge of emotion that it's sometimes made out to be. Actually, the sign Cancer is able to cogitate efficiently as an element of its inherent being. That's partly because you have Virgo in the third place. Virgo is like the biocomputer that is cogitating and like processing all of this insane amount of mental and sensory data that we have. And turns out that there's a whole bunch going on in Pisces, this house of your organic, inherent spirituality, right? And all of that bubbling and churning and waves crashing and currents moving and octopus hanging out in his garden are embodied in Jupiter, the traditional ruling planet of Pisces, and Jupiter is in your third house. You are in an impeccable position to think about the most sublime, ineffable, unspeakable, unexpressible experiences that you have in these kind of higher mental and cosmic realms, and to basically boil it down into a kind of a teaching. And I would say whatever you do, it would be greatly beneficial to you and quite possibly to me, in case I read what you write, to boil things down to teachings, teaching memos, for example, or tell the story of something, to directly utilize the power of writing as a means of focusing the mind and then preserving what was learned in a form that others can immediately benefit from, and that you benefit from by doing that condensation of knowledge. Now, Jupiter hangs out around here for much of the year. The North Node is here as well, which is guiding the flow from Pisces to Virgo, just as Jupiter is guiding the flow from Pisces to Virgo, from the house of the ineffable and wide and oceanic and millions of streams and rivers, a couple of earthquakes, into the immediate house of consciousness, the neighborhood, the community. I'm not sure I mentioned this in the written reading, but this is an awesome time to make sure that you ground your energy locally, that you do things that are local in nature. I kind of gave a general rant on this subject in my article about potluck dinners. I'm not sure, I forget what I called it, but it was the one published late in the year about potluck dinners. Let me just make a note to link to that. Ah, how could I forget? Global warming and the potluck dinner. And the concept of the potluck dinner is to keep it local, keep it friendly, and also to have a place where there's no money exchanged. Right? Just where people hang out and give each other stuff. And this is a, first of all, vital step in planetary healing. We must rebuild, repair, and redesign our communities. And one of the teachings that you may well have is a form of community rebuilding wisdom. And it would be wise of you to do this locally and then record things you've learned in some way that makes them transmittable, that you can deploy them to someplace else where the folk are pondering similar questions. And then as the year develops, you do this, it starts to gain a result, and that you'll see that result and feel that result. And then right around then, Jupiter changes from Virgo to Libra in your chart, moving from the third place to the fourth place, third house to the fourth house, same thing. And now we have Jupiter in the style of Libra. And that is an awesome Jupiter because it is a form of Jupiter. Initially, we had Jupiter in Virgo, tempered by Mercury. That's great. And then now Jupiter in Libra, tempered by, conditioned by, or influenced, fed by combination of Venus and Saturn. So this is, as Crowley said, love is the law, love under will. Love is the law. However, love under will. Bringing the power to love underneath the ability to choose. A great phrase. There's a lot to be learned, by the way, from Mr. Libra, Aleister Crowley. Best book, most comprehensible, and funniest, is the Book of Thoth, his book on the tarot. Okay, pitch for Crowley over. Fourth place, Libra. I was writing these notes sitting at Rugi Subaru, where I was having my oil changed, and while I was having my oil changed in little old Rhinebeck, quaint Rhinebeck, on the posh side of the river, I also suggested, asked them to put in a rearview mirror that has a compass on it. Now, I say I don't like to go very far, but when I do, I really like to go to like some far corner of the earth, and really helps to have a compass in your car, but you can't really get one because your iPhone compass spazzes out and you can't trust your keychain compass, so you've got to get one as an accessory to a car, shielded. And I thought, how Jupiter in Libra is that fourth house having that kind of portable home of the vehicle exactly right, particularly navigational equipment? And Jupiter in Libra is saying, make your living space exactly right. Find one. Change and get one. Alter yours. Do the small things you need. If you work with equipment in your line of work, get the upgrade. Get the good ones. Make your studio just so. Have a thing where you can not have to skimp on that home expense, personal studio expense, budget line, where you can really do it right and view it as a kind of a process, right? You don't have to get everything all at once. In fact, it's better if you make many changes incrementally and make enhancements. But notice what you want. Notice what you need. Notice when there's a tool missing. Notice when you're reaching, you know, for a second pair of scissors, right? Not the most expensive thing in the world. You should have, how many pairs of scissors do you actually need? Okay, like, you know, $5 each. And kind of meticulously improve, enhance your home life. One of the things about the sign Cancer that's often attributed to the sign Cancer itself, it's actually a function of Libra being on the fourth place from Cancer, is your home must be a place of balance and beauty. It must present well to yourself and to others, and it must also be, you know, useful, balanced, beautiful. Remember the Saturn connection to Libra. Saturn is exalted in Libra, and so Libra loves practical beauty. Pisces just loves beauty. Libra wants practical beauty. It's beautiful to do the job right. It's not just done right. There's an aesthetic satisfaction of having the thing done well. And Jupiter is just here to enrich that sensation, that you know, state of mind, and invite you to live better and to direct your energy into that. As a form of feeding the tree, as a form of establishing grounding, as a means of finding yourself, and as a means of enhancing your relationships. There's an interesting connection between the sign Cancer and Jupiter, which is that in the esoteric system, posited by Alice Bailey, ignored by almost everyone, Jupiter is the subtle ruling planet, which you might think of as the subtle ruling planet of, no, correct, rewind, correction. In classical astrology, Jupiter is exalted in Cancer, and it represents an extension of you. The thing I was thinking about from Bailey, esoteric, was the connection between Neptune and Cancer, and I do recommend, if you're an astrology student contemplating the relationship of your Neptune placement and thinking of that as a ruling planet of your sign and see what story it tells. But the same is true with Jupiter. And Jupiter, this kind of extension of the sign Cancer, and the concept at the heart of Cancer embodied in this Jupiterian largesse, watery way, moving into the fourth house, is saying, implant yourself into your physical environment. It's going to span from the community into the home space, and the kind of growth orientation of that is really about feeling safe and comfortable in a world where it's admittedly not that easy to feel safe and comfortable, and also to engage with that through the beauty and the confidence that being part of your community is about, and then the confidence and sense of belonging that having a balanced home offers. And since Libra's here, your concept of relationship closely involves something you do at home, right? Libra, the sign of relationships, merged with the concept of the fourth house in your chart, home. Ah, what do you do with a relationship? You've got someone to stay home with. You might like to go out and all that, but really, come on, it's about me and you. Let's hang out. So having your home space be beautiful to accommodate that, this will make you happy, which is why I'm here to tell you these things. Okay, one last big thought. Somewhat puzzling. Gave long rant on what other planets to contemplate if you're born under the sign Cancer, but, you know, there's always good old moon, the moon. As the B-52s say, there's a moon in the sky, we call it the moon. The B-52s are some funny people. A moon in the sky, we call it the moon. But wait, like, who is it? Ah, Diana, goddess of protection of young women and goddess of the hunt, and Selene, the moon goddess, Selene. Good name for the moon. So we call it the moon, but actually it's named either Diana or Selene, depending on what tradition, and there's going to be a bazillion other names. Conjunct, in Capricorn. So here we have the moon manifesting in your opposite sign for your ingress. So that also means that right before the Cancer ingress, like 10 hours before, there's a full moon in Sagittarius. And then the very next thing that happens is the moon enters Capricorn and the sun enters Cancer. So there is the momentum of something carried from behind the scenes into the foreground. And at the time of the solstice, the northern solstice, sun ingress of the sign Cancer, the moon is conjunct the following. Let me get a more detailed breakdown of these planets. Early, looking for early cardinal signs. Let's see what this says. There is a whole bunch making aspects to the moon at this particular moment. And that includes the moon is opposite Venus. The moon is opposite Karma. The moon is opposite Hera. The moon is opposite Hades. And it is conjunct Amicus and Periclo. Now, here's what I know about all that. We talked a bit about Venus and Hera and Karma, and that's about the jealousy thing. And it's about the power of love and how love unites and doesn't divide, and jealousy basically is adharmic in that it just tears the world apart, and the answer to jealousy is compersion, and compersion is growth. Compersion is embracing the contradictions, and then it feels really good. And this is opposite. The moon is in a conjunction, and it's in a two-way conjunction with Amicus and Cariclo, two centaurs. Powerful. They ain't asteroids. Centaurs are not asteroids. They are revved with the power of Chiron, but they're often on wavelengths we don't exactly identify. Cariclo was the partner of Chiron. Chiron experienced this injury, and when you think of Cariclo, think of the person, the water nymph, who hung out with him for nearly forever. She was probably immortal. He was immortal but mortally wounded. So Chiron is the expression of the contradiction of human existence and how we feel here, kind of like halfway between human and animal, halfway between mortal and immortal. But the person who kept him company, the entity who kept him company, was his devoted wife, Cariclo. And so she is right there in a conjunction to the moon in Capricorn. And then Amicus. What I know about the planet Amicus is it shows up powerfully in the charts of the Yes Men. Google them if you're not familiar with who they are. You'll probably, if you Google them with my name, you'll find my writing about them. And the Yes Men are servants, basically. They do these kind of pranks, but their job is to get the attention through the attention of the power structure and the public through kind of unusual activist stunts, like getting invited onto BBC. Only BBC doesn't know that they're activists. They think that they're Dow Chemical, and crazy things happen. Now, the crazy as in beautiful things happen. There's something here about embodying devotion. It is essential to embody the principle of devotion, often described by Vesta, but I think that the moon conjunct Cariclo, conjunct Amicus and Capricorn, there is something there about the devotion not being at the expense of the demand of don't make me jealous. Instead, the service you're offering is the allowing the freedom and the space for others to be who they are while you hold the ground of the relationship through the process of devotion and through working with structure. So there's a kind of a reclaiming here. There's a kind of a retrieval here of something that's, if you think of Pluto in Capricorn, your seventh relationship house, seventh house, as being about the breakdown of a very highly structured social order, returning it to something more elemental, previous to the overstructuring of that thing, whatever it was, and letting that old thing flourish. When it's kind of like the plants come back when the concrete parking lot is taken down. So something old is here to flourish in what has been a place of kind of a lot of change and possibly some devastation or just constant nonstop enforced change of Pluto in Capricorn since 2008. Holding of space for yourself and for a partner or partners, as if all of that didn't happen, or you might say the authentic calm after the storm. All right. You know, there's one more subject. I'm going to take the time to mention it. Varuna. In 2000, Varuna was discovered. It was a big deal at the time. It's approximately 300-year orbit, one row out from Pluto, named for the Mithra Varuna, pair of god and goddesses, creator god, but also god of justice and contracts and agreements. And Varuna was discovered in the sign Cancer and has made its way clear across that sign and therefore has made conjunctions to planets or to your ascendant. And now, finally, for the first time since its discovery, Varuna is changing signs to Leo. And here's what this says to me, and I will leave you on this happy note, that one of the things you have learned about yourself with Varuna in your sign is how to approach the world on level ground. Most people tend to be shrunken by their encounters, and Varuna has a reputation for being the equalizer. Those are my keywords for Varuna. And the enforcer of contracts. And the equalizer enforcer thing has worked in your favor in that you have learned to approach the world on much more level ground, and you have learned to engage people on the level of them fulfilling their commitment to you. This is awkward territory to go through. Not easy. However, it would appear that you have kind of graduated, and further, that this becomes a kind of a gold asset as Varuna makes its way into and across Leo, your second house of personal resources, which is represented by Leo, the sign of gold and the sun. And this is a key to financial success, this seeing people on level ground, poor person, a billionaire, whoever it might be, the ability to relate to people, looking at them in the eye, not on a pedestal, not down below, is a precious asset that you have earned and possess as one of your most necessary resources to draw upon. Music you're listening to is, I don't know what song I'm going to pick, but I think I'm going to pick the one that I love the most out of the choices here, which is, let's do Magic Carpet. That's what you're listening to. Magic Carpet. That's me and Grimsland and Sternstein. We've been meeting once or twice a week for about 3 months and coming up with this stuff. And so, to me, the Vision Quest audio, in fact, the Vision Quest project, but especially the audio, begins as vibration, as sound, as completely disannexed from intellectual thought and astrological concept. And we have entered this sonic dimension on the level of what we're feeling on any given day, and pick up the appropriate instruments and let the music play. I'll let this piece play out for you. This has been fun. And I'll catch you in the next reading with a look at some really spectacular runes.
Thank you.